Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is your boy, the Cuz. Levon isn't with us today. He's at the attending the Cavu Jazz Fest. However, we do have a great lineup in store for us today. We have Sister Lisa Muhammad, who will be attending shortly. I think she just called in, as a matter of fact. Hello, are you with us?
I am. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Lisa. How you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me today. Like I was just telling everybody today, Levon isn't with us, so we're in a little bit of trouble today because I'm at the boys, but we're going to keep it pushing. But again, so let's start off with that. First of all, again, I want to welcome you to the show. Lisa, if you could, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, my name is Lisa, and I am a retired police officer. I did 21 years in law enforcement, and during that time, I decided that I was going to go into business, and one of the businesses that I started was Fit Girl 360 LLC, which is basically a personal training, group fitness, and personal safety business, and I do personal training for mainly women, but I do take men as well, and I also teach self-defense classes at different domestic violence shelters throughout the D.C. metropolitan area. And I also am a sports nutrition consultant as well as a weight management consultant and an author. And I'm also co-owner of Muhammad's Boxing and Martial Arts located in King George, Virginia.
Okay, so those big things for the DMV. We definitely appreciate you joining the show, like I said. And you know, when Lee told me that you were coming on, it seemed like everything is always right on time. I'm former military, so, you know, I try to stay fit as much as I can. But this, you know, fitness to me is something that a lot of people really don't, for various reasons, is not a big part of their lives. So I appreciate you joining the show to come, you know, talk to us about what you are doing and what you can bring. So tell us about some of the experiences that you've had or what got you into fitness.
What got me into fitness was I went out to a Zumba-thon, and basically it was a huge place that was rented out, and it was probably like 200 people there, and they were taking this dance class, fitness class, and I was there, you know, because I'd never been to one before, and I'd heard about this thing called Zumba, and so I went there, and I had a ball. And right then and there, I was thinking, you know what? I've always danced, but I've never combined dance and fitness. And so Zumba was the thing that opened up the door for me. The other thing that opened up the door, or that was the catalyst to keep pushing me forward, was that I had mentioned to a friend that I really love Zumba. I wanted to go out, and I wanted to be certified and things like that, but I was told that I probably wouldn't stick to it. And that right there was what got me pushing, like, you know what? I don't even have to prove to that person. I have to prove to myself that I can do it, that I can stick with it, and I could go the course. And so I started off with that first license to teach Zumba. Then I went to Zumba Basics 2. Then I went to Aqua Zumba. And then I went from there to personal training, to group fitness, to kickboxing. And by the time I was done, within 5 years, I had 11 certifications in fitness.
Oh, wow. So you mentioned something that I think that plagues a lot of people in regards to fitness, and that's sticking to it. What was the motivation to stick to it?
When I was seeing the results that other people were getting from coming to my classes and from working with me and from my teaching. And then when I was applying the same principles to myself and seeing my body change and seeing, oh, my God, I am like clay. I'm moldable, I'm malleable, and I can train myself to look and be however I want. And when you start seeing those results, it's like you get addicted. You want more. You want to keep on going.
Oh, yeah, And again, you know, when you say that, that opens up another problem because, you know, a lot of people are impatient with seeing a result. Have you experienced that with your clients? And, you know, what are some of the things that you say to them?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I have heard some crazy things. I have had clients say to me, I want to start with you. My first day is going to be on Monday. And then they'll come and they'll see me on Monday. They'll do a workout. We'll discuss how they eat. And on Thursday, they'll call me. I haven't lost any weight yet. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's only been 3 days. Can we have a little bit of time? Or they'll come to me and they'll say, you know, I need to lose this weight. I was a size 6. 5 years ago, but now I'm a size 22. But do you think you can get me down to at least a size 8 within 6 weeks?
In 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that a lot.
I believe you. You know, again, being in the military, you know, we have this thing called, you know, the weight control standards and stuff like that. And then, you know, you got soldiers who within, you know, 2 weeks before the physical fitness test, they want to drop 10 pounds. And then they expect themselves to be able to go out there and run 2 miles and do 2 minutes worth of push-ups and 2 minutes worth of sit-ups. You know, I'm talking about the Army standards, not the Air Force standards like Levon, you know, he goes by. But, you know, with the Army standards, you know, it's two mile run, 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and you expect to, again, lose that weight in 2 weeks and be able to perform to the max capacity doing your physical fitness test. And one of the things that I try to get people to understand is the safest way to lose weight is to do it over time. You know, like that example
exactly.
You gave. That example you just gave was someone, you know, going from a size 6 to a size 22 and wanting to go back down, you know, 18 dress sizes in 6 weeks. Like, you know, that's first of all, it's not practical. Second of all, it's not healthy at all. Even if you are able to accomplish that goal, it's not healthy.
It's not feasible.
Yeah, not at all. So when you're faced with that, how do you continue to motivate that particular person who who has those unrealistic wishes or dreams. How do you attack that person?
Well, I have to actually sit down and I have to keep it 100 with them and tell them, listen, you did not get to where you are overnight, so your expectation should not be to lose it every night. So what I need you to do is look for tiny steps, tiny increments, tiny victories. We're not going to even look at the scale. We're going to look at how are your clothes feeling? How are your pants fitting around your waist size? And the rule of thumb is normally it takes 30 days for you to even see a change in yourself. It takes 60 days for your friends to see the change in your body, and 90 days for your family that sees you day in and out. Because, you know, those people that are closest to us, they see us all the time, so they may not see the change as quickly as someone who's not living with us and seeing us every day. But I tell them, I say, okay, let's look at our goal for this month. This month, our goal is to eat consistently, to work out consistently, and to stay the course. And at the end of this month, we're going to look back and we're going to see where we were and where we are. And then we take pictures at the beginning and then at the end of those 30 days. And normally in the pictures, you can see there's a little bit of a change and they can feel it in their clothing. But not only that, a lot of them can breathe better. They can think clearer, and their body is now accustomed to eating and releasing, and you can see the adaptation in how they move and in how they exercise. It's more fluid. And that in and of itself helps them to motivate themselves, because they're like, oh, my God, my body is changing. It's happening. It may not be happening as fast as they want, but it is happening, and that helps keep them pushing.
Hey, that's a good point, too, what I'm going to call your 30, 60, 90 plan in regards to seeing results and, you know, and seeing those and having those expectations met. That's a really good way to put it, because, you know, my wife, every time she, you know, she goes into a workout kick, the first thing she want to do is go buy a new scale. I don't tell her, we probably have like 10 scales in the house piled up in the closet because every time I turn around, oh, we need a new scale. Well, what's different from this scale than the last scale? Like, it's all the same. Just, you know, the battery might be dead. Might need to buy a new battery, you know. But the scales, I think, are like the kryptonite to success. And, yeah, I think people watch those TV programs, The Biggest Loser, and they think that, okay, every week they hop on a scale. But you're not. That's not real time. You know, this is time lapse. You know, this edited footage, and it might be, you know, two or 3 weeks before they ever hop back on the scale again. But you happen to see it every week, so you think you're supposed to hop on the scale every week. You know, and I think that a lot of times I think it's counterproductive a lot of times when people hop on the scale before they work out, then hop on the scale after they work out, then go back and forth, and you're not seeing. You're probably seeing your weight go the opposite way. Tomorrow when you wake up and you work out, you hop on the scale. You know, because
you drink some water. Yeah, you know, you're supposed to weigh yourself first thing in the morning, okay?
Right.
So a lot of times people will weigh themselves in the morning and they weigh themselves at the end of the day. Why would you weigh yourself at the end of the day when you're full of everything? You may be retaining water. You may have extra salt. That's crazy. The other thing is, when I was competing in bodybuilding, my goal was to drop weight. My competition weight was 140 pounds. But I would always get to 150 pounds, and I would stick there for like 6 weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. And it didn't concern me because I understood what was happening. We can get on a scale and be 150 pounds and look like a fat 150 pounds or a muscular 150 pounds or a lean 150 pounds. So a lot of people get upset when the scale doesn't move because they're thinking that if I'm getting in shape, the weight should drop. Yeah, the weight is going to drop, but see, muscle weighs more than fat. So like you said, sometimes that scale is going to go up once you start working out, once you start lifting weights, and once you start developing the muscle. But even though that number may go up or the number may stay the same, the way that you look is going to change, and the way that your clothes fit, that's going to change as well because everything is shifting. And you're going to look better.
That's another good way to point it is, you know, you could be on the good side of the weight or you could be on the bad side of the weight. You know, and that depends on what you're doing. you know, and I try to tell people that, you know, I'm like in the middle. You know, I'm at 225, but, you know, I have enough muscle mass, but I have a layer of fat that I want to get rid of. You know, but again, like, if you can look in the mirror and you can be, you know, satisfied with your appearance, but you're not seeing those numbers change necessarily, then, you know, it might be the fact that, again, like you said, the muscle weighs more than fat. So if you see your chisel coming back, you see that six pack, you know what I'm saying, popping out, you know, for me, it starts in my face. You know, when I'm working out on a consistent basis, drinking my water like I'm supposed to, eating right, I see the initial results in my face. That's how I know that what I'm doing is working. Then it starts working its way down from there. But a lot of you have to pay attention to your body. I read an article a few years ago where it talked about body composition and how certain foods react to your body. Like, I always thought that for me, eating chicken, whether it be grilled, baked, or whatever, was good for me. But for me, eating chicken isn't good for me. My body doesn't metabolize it the way that it might, you know, metabolize in my brother.
Right.
So
exactly.
It's a lot of, you know, you have to really study your body, study what works for you, and follow your diet, your nutritional plans. I like to say that. Follow that appropriately. Work out consistently and be patient.
Exactly.
Go ahead. You have something else you want to say?
Oh, no. You're good.
Well, no. So I mean, it's just so if you have somebody who wants to start up, what would be the first plan of action that you would suggest? A brand new person, new to fitness, but just want to change in their lives. What's the first suggestion you have for them?
The very first thing that I would tell a person who was trying to make that huge change, that leap of faith into the unknown, I would tell them to go visit their doctor. Visit your doctor, get a checkup, a look over, a look see, and make sure that your doctor is cool with you starting an exercise regimen and starting a clean eating program. And the reason why I say go to a doctor, that is to ensure that you don't have any undiagnosed or unforeseen situations that can pop up once you start doing whatever exercise program that it is that you would like to engage in. And also let your doctor know what it is that you plan on doing, whether it's preparing to run a marathon or simply just trying to tone up, or if it's building muscle mass, or if you want to be a bodybuilder. Let your doctor know exactly what it is that you want to do. That way the doctor knows what to look for, or to give you some warning signs. Or, like, for someone like me, because I have a herniated disc in my back and I have a slip disc, there's just certain things I cannot do. I cannot lift weights over my head anymore. I can't do a deadlift, which is bending over while holding a weight, because it's going to mess up my lower back. Those are things that your doctor will talk with you about to say, listen, if you are going to do this program, opt for a different exercise that works that same muscle group. And then once you get the clearance from the doctor, go visit a local gym or hire a personal trainer who can actually sit down, talk with you about your fitness goals, and actually come up with a plan of action for you. And you don't have to go to a gym to get in shape. Personal trainers are available to come to your home. They can show you how to do a full body weight workout right in your living room that you can do when that trainer is not there, or you can have a trainer that meets you at the gym and shows you how to use the equipment. Or if you're not ready for that, you can look to see where there's group fitness classes, whether it's Zumba or Insanity or kickboxing or step aerobics, and go to a local community center and take a class there.
You know what? You brought up something again that I think is a kryptonite for somebody who's trying to lose weight, the gym. I think that what a lot of people, when they go into the gym, they're overwhelmed. You know, they don't, like you said, they don't know how to use the equipment. And then if I'm a 32-year-old man, if I go in there and I see another guy who looks, you know, around my age, and he's banging out, you know, 400 pounds, you know, he's pressing 422 times, and I'm back on this 125, and I can only get up 125, you know, five times.
my confidence is shaken. You know, so then I'm intimidated by the gym and the people around the gym. You know, how can someone shake those fears or break down those barriers and not worry about what's going on around them in the gym? What's your input on that?
Most reputable gyms actually have trainers on hand, on site.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you want to do is before you even make the visit to the gym, you can actually call the gym and ask if they have a trainer that's available, tell them the date and the time that you want to come. And they may charge a nominal fee. A lot of them give you the first training day free. And you go
mm-hmm.
in and you meet the trainer, and that trainer will ask you, what is it that you're looking to do? And you tell them, and normally they'll come up with a full body type of thing, workout, and they'll take you to the machines and introduce you to those machines and let you work through them so that you can know exactly what you do on each machine. Another thing is that in most gyms, if you look at the machine itself, the machine will have a sign to tell you what type of machine it is, and it'll tell you the body parts that it works, and it'll also show you a diagram on how to use it. It'll show you the starting position, the working position, and the end position. So that's helpful. If you don't want to do that, I would say go online and Google full-body gym workouts for beginners. And then when that comes up, look over that and then get one of your best friends to go hang out at the gym with you. And then you don't feel so awkward. You can go in there and the two of you can figure out the machines. But the thing that I think that is most important for all of us is to not look at the person to the left or to the right. I've always told my sons and I've always told myself, the only competition is between me and the me that I used to be. So when I'm going into the gym, I'm not trying to look like the woman that's over to the left who's doing chest presses with 150 pounds, and I'm over here struggling with a 45-pound bar. That's not my concern. My concern is, okay, Lisa, last week you were doing chest presses with two 10-pound dumbbells. This week you need to do these chest presses with two 15-pound dumbbells, and if you can push those out, you are winning. So your competition is with the person that you were last week. Your competition is you. Your best is what you're besting yourself. There's always going to be someone else whose body is bigger, more muscular, leaner, just more awesomer, if that's a word. There's always going to be somebody who you feel is always going to be a step ahead. And when we compare ourselves to other people, we always give ourselves the short end of the stick because we focus on the negatives instead of the strengths. So it's easier for us to focus on ourselves and say, oh, shucks, man, you got this exercise. You're doing it. You're getting it. You did better this week than last week. And if you just write down your goals and accomplishments and write down the reps and the sets that you've done, you'll see that progression the more that you stick to it. And that'll motivate you and encourage you to keep going.
You know, that's great advice because I think that, and again, in my experiences, you know, with being a soldier, you know, with being, you know, now I'm a civilian, and I have a membership at Planet Fitness, and I people watch a lot, and I see some people go into the gym and they start off, you know, nice, they motivated, they start looking around, and next thing I know, 5 minutes later, they're leaving out the gym, and they look kind of distraught sometimes, you know, and sometimes I wonder if they're allowing themselves, or like you said, they're comparing themselves to the person to the left and to the right, and really losing their focus and really losing their motivation in other people and not focusing on the fact that they might have, last week, you know, been on 25 pounds, but this week they have 50 pounds. I think you definitely have to, you know, challenge yourself and compete against yourself more than anybody. But what I noticed that you said from your introduction and from your last statement was that it seems like this is a family affair. your fitness work. And that's good, right? But I can't work out with my wife. It's not happening. She doesn't listen. You know, she quit on me. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, but somebody else. You know, but somebody else, you know, might be effective for her. Like, what advice do you have for people who want to do the family thing, but fall into the pits of, you know, the overbearing husband and, or the last or the other way around. It could be, you know, the wife is motivated, but the husband is just fat and lazy. Like, what advice do you have in regards to advancing family effect? Because I think that it starts with the family. Like, you can't have, I don't think you can really be a fitness person and you're eating, you know, you have this bright diet, but everybody in the house is eating, you know, 3 or 4 slices of pizza on Tuesday, and, you know, they're eating 5 hot dogs. I don't think that that's, you know, that that's, help me out, because I know a lot of people who do that. I know a lot of people who, you know, especially women, they're fitness gurus. You know, they stack, you know, they run and they do all the Zumba and they do the dance classes. Some of them do pole classes, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. They do all types of stuff to stay fit. But then you see their husbands and their kids, and they eating, you know, two double cheeseburgers or 2 Big Macs and extra large fries, and why they shouldn't eating bird food. Like, how does that work?
Well, I got to keep it totally 100 with you, okay? My husband and I do not work out together. We do not work out together. My husband was actually a personal trainer first, and this was many, many moons ago. I want to say 17 years ago he was a personal trainer. And he tried to train me, and I didn't listen to him. I didn't want to hear it because he is not the boss of me. So here we are, fast forward. So here we are, fast forward to now, and I'm doing personal training, and I'm doing sports nutrition consulting. And he'll ask me to write up a meal plan or, you know, do a meal plan suggestion for him or something. And I'll do it, and then he doesn't follow it. And I'm looking at him like, I told you specifically to eat this and that and the other. And he's telling me he's substituting what he wants because he knows what he's doing because he's a trainer too. And we don't play well together.
So y'all got a pissing contest going on too at the same time.
We are a mess over here. He does martial arts. He's a martial arts instructor, and he runs the schools. Our martial arts schools, my oldest son is a martial arts instructor as well, and then my youngest son is a competitive gymnast. So I'm fortunate that in my family, pretty much for the most part, we do eat clean and we all have a healthy lifestyle because of what we've chosen to do health and fitness-wise. However, there are some people who just don't have that type of support in their family. And the one thing that I would tell women especially, because we tend to be goats and we tend to graze off of our children's plates and put ourselves last. And so the one thing that I tend to tell women is, number one, understand that you may not have support. You may not have backup, because when I first delved into fitness, I did not have all of the support that I felt that I should have, and I felt like I was jumping into the water by myself without any floaties and no swim lessons. So just understand that when you go into this, you may be swimming upstream and you may be swimming alone, but that's okay. Because right at this moment, when you choose to do a lifestyle of health and fitness, you are making a commitment to yourself that I am going to be the best me that I can be, because we only get one chance at life. We only get one body. So why not be at your very best? And so then I say the next step is, once you make that commitment, set an appointment with yourself in the calendar to do something. Even if it's only 30 minutes a day, set that calendar date for you. Because the same way that we can get up and go out to work to a job that we may not like, or the same way that we can get up and attend a cookout we really didn't feel like going to, we need to put that same effort into self-improvement. And to show up for ourselves, don't cancel, because there's many days that I know that I had to go to work and I didn't want to go, but I showed up to get that check. Same thing with the gym. Yeah, same thing with the gym. I don't feel like going to work out every day. I don't feel like going to train every day. I don't feel like eating right every day. But guess what? I want what's going to be the result of my being consistent. I want that nice body. I want to feel good. I want that confidence boost. And so that is what pushes me, and that's what I tell my clients. Use that to push you forward. And there are going to be people that say, you're doing all this working out, and You're going to die anyway. You may as well die happy. Well, yeah, I'm going to die, but I ain't trying to die sooner than later.
Yeah,
and I'm definitely
say,
not trying
to.
Exactly. I'm not trying to die sooner than later by eating a whole lot of grease, and I'm not trying to have the extra large casket when I do die. You know what I'm saying? I want to have the best body that I could possibly have and to push forward despite any obstacles that may surround me. And you'll find that once you get into a rhythm of going to the gym or attending fitness classes or working out with someone else who is fitness-minded, that you kind of build a gym family or a fitness family. So even if you don't have the support that you feel like you should have at home or from your friends, those other people that you're working out with, they become that support system for you. One of my closest friends I met at the gym, she was using a machine I'd never seen before, and I was a trainer. And I was like, excuse me, when I let her finish her set, and I said, excuse me, what is this? And she told me what the machine was, and I said, your body is spectacular. And she was like, oh, yeah, I compete in bodybuilding, and we started talking, and she got me competing into bodybuilding, and she was the one that would call me, how are you feeling today? How are you eating? You can do this. And she would check on me, and she became an accountability partner. And we've been friends for a long time now because of that.
You took the words right out of my mouth, or the phrase, accountability partner. I think that's anything that you set yourself up to do, whether it be nutrition, personal fitness, bodybuilding, a new career, you know, if you want to write a book, what people really first have to realize that it's an individual journey. You can't expect for everyone to be, you know, jiving with your personal goals, you know. It's an individual journey. So, but within that, you can have certain people share your experiences and go along the ride. What you have to determine is those people who are just going along with the ride just to see how it failed, or you have the people that's going to go along with the ride to see you succeed. And those people are your accountability partners who you're going to lean on for strength and some motivation and encouragement, and who's also going to see when you're not motivated, when you're not encouraged, and they're going to pick you up and they're going to push you forward at the same time. That phrase accountability partner is one. I'm a resiliency instructor, and that's one of those kumbaya foo-foo things that people be like, that stuff is, you know, it's too hippie. But it's the truth, though. You need those people, but you have to be open to it, though. And a lot of people, they're so resistant to help a lot of times. They're so resistant to, like you said, you know, somebody pushing them, because you take it personally and you think that somebody's trying to be the boss, but you need that. If anything that you've accomplished as hard in life, you have to know that you haven't done it by yourself. I don't care how hard you think you are, how tough you think you are, you know, how strong you think you are. Anything that's a challenge in your life, you have not done it completely by yourself. You might be selfish and think that you have done it by yourself, but you've had people along the way that's pushed you and influenced you and motivated you and inspired you. But, yeah, so that accountability part, the piece, is a real big important or component to anything, especially because it's tough. It's tough.
You're right. You're exactly right. You are exactly right. It helps to have that person that's going to push you when you don't have any push to give to yourself. And it also keeps you honest. If you had somebody that you have to tell that you ate a whole pack of 12 Twinkies, that's going to make you think twice. You know, if you had somebody that you have to admit that you turned off the alarm and skipped your date with the gym, that's going to make you think twice about it, you know. And if you had that person that's going to cheer for you when you're up, and still cheer for you even when you're down and say, come on, get on up off of the ground. You can do that. You can do this. You can do whatever you put your mind to. That's going to push you to work even harder, because sometimes you feel like you're on your own and you're by yourself, and a lot of times we get embarrassed, too, about what we look like, and we get embarrassed if we're not doing things exactly right. You know, I've had people tell me, I want to hire you, but first I want to get some of this weight off before I come see you. And I look at them, I'm like, you do realize that you go to a personal trainer to help your fitness goals. Well, yeah, right, but I'm too big right now to come see you. But once I lose some weight, and I have to ask them, and people tell me that I am kind of hard and that I am straightforward, which I am. And I say, well, how's it been working for you? Because if you're this size now, you were this size a month ago, and you were this size 2 months ago, another month of not seeing me is not going to make you drop the weight. Because if you could, you would have done it by now. So why don't you come see me now, and we can help you drop that weight together. And I give you a guarantee that you will lose something if you put in the work with me, and I will push you. And with my clients, I tell them, I don't care what question it is. I don't care how silly you may think it sounds. I don't care how weird you may think it sounds. You need to text me, call me, smoke signal, carrier pigeon, cannon string. Reach out to me because we are working on this project together to get you to where you need to be. There's no room for embarrassment here. No room for shame. There's only room for work and self-improvement because there's no judgment.
You know, Planet Fitness has that mantra. You know, they have like a no judgment zone. And again, I have a membership there, and I also have like my home gym in my garage. You know, for the days that I don't feel like going to the gym, or I might be too busy with all my work and my kids and stuff like that. So I just work out at home. But I think that's a big component to it is, you know, having that fact, again, this goes back to the accountability partner and not feeling judged if you can't perform like the people that's around you, but instead being motivated to accomplish your individual goals. But the one thing we didn't talk about is the nutrition side of it. We touched on it a little bit, but I'm a semi-stay-at-home dad. Again, like I said, I just got in the military, but I run a mentoring program, and then I'm here with I have three babies at home and my 18-year-old. So some days more than most days, I'll say, I don't have the time to prepare the meals, like the healthy meals. Most days it's easier to just go to McDonald's or order some Chinese food and stuff like that. But what advice do you have for the busy household in regards to healthy eating? Because for me, the organic stuff, you know, it's popular now. Everybody wants to go organic and, you know, all the, the clean living. It's time-consuming and it's expensive as hell, in my opinion. What solution? You know, it is, man. Like, I never understand why, you know, I understand the economics of it, but, you know, you're promoting or we are promoting, you know, healthy eating, you know, clean living and stuff like that, but it's breaking your damn pockets. It's easy for me to go get this pick two for $2.50 at McDonald's, you know what I'm saying? They buy me a $1 extra large drink and drink on that bad boy all daggone day. Then they ask me to go get some broccoli, you know, get some salmon, you know, or get some, you know, some chicken breast or bonus skin of chicken. It's easier for me to get this dollar menu stuff than it is for me to. And again, it's more cost effective for the family than it is for me to eat all this clean stuff and organic stuff. What about you have for those people?
I will tell you this, my family is very busy. We are extremely busy because, like I told you, my youngest son is a competitive gymnast. His gym is an hour away from my house, an hour each way, and he trains 4, sometimes 5 days a week. So, I mean, we are very, very busy. And then when you own 2 karate schools that are an hour apart from each other, that keeps us on the go. So I do not have time to cook every single day. So the biggest key when it comes to preparing meals is preparation. I cook on Sundays and I cook on Wednesdays. So what I do is I keep things really simple. I know what meals that I'm going to be preparing for my family and for myself. So I know that if I'm going to have one meal of chicken breast, brown rice, and green beans, and another meal of chicken breast and sweet potato and broccoli, then I'm going to go and I'm going to cook as many chicken breasts as possible on Sunday to carry us through Wednesday. Does that make sense? So I have crock pots, I have cans, and my crock pots are always cooking, always. So I cook on Sundays for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then I cook on Wednesday night for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then we allow ourselves to eat out for one meal on Saturday. As far as shopping is concerned, I find that it's more cost-effective to buy all of my fruits and vegetables in season at farmers markets, open-air farmers markets, okay, because it's cheaper to get it that way. I can take $30 and get a green grocery bag full of fruits and vegetables that will last us for almost 2 weeks. When it comes to meats, I shop the sale papers, and I like stores like Safeway that has the $5 Fridays. I like Shoppers that has the big family pack because, you know, Shoppers Food Warehouse has the big family pack, and it's not as expensive. And then I also have taken into Googling wholesale meat places, and I'll go out and I'll buy meat by the bulk. And I get my whitefish. I'll get my chicken, or I'll get my salmon, or I'll get my turkey from there. I don't do red meat. I don't do pork. So that's not a big concern. And that is actually making my budget a little bit less than normal because we don't eat any pork or red meat, and that's more expensive than buying chicken, fish, and turkey.
Okay. Well, it's, in the way you say it, it sounds so easy. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I'm serious. Like, you make it sound like so, and it probably is. But, you know, I don't know. Meal prep, like, I see people online always, you know, they had stacks and stacks and stacks of Tupperware dishes, you know, and this is their lunch stack, and this is their dinner stack. And, you know, I'm just looking at it like, oh my God, like, that's like 13 chicken breasts right there. And they took, like.
But wait a minute. They are doing way too much. I see those posts as well. And they've got like, they bought like 15 different sets and they got them all stacked up. This is my meal. These are my meals for the week. That's too much, okay? Cook that stuff, leave it in the pot, ladle it out as you need it.
Okay. Yeah. So, again, that sounds a lot easier than this other stuff that I see because I'm like, there's no way that I'm going to sit there, you know, and chop up this and cook this breast and put this in this container. And, oh, man, I got kids running around here trying to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got clothes washing folds. I got the game, come on, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to sit there and watch. I should not be sitting there cooking while the NBA Finals is on. That's un-American to me. It's not manly to me. So as a man, I'm not going to be sitting there on Sunday when the Warriors beat the brakes off the Cleveland Cavaliers and meal prepping. That's not happening. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, it's just not happening. You know, I have to stick to my manhood in some way, shape, and form and make sure that I catch this game. But
agreed.
But speaking of fitness and manhood, you know, I don't know how long you have with us, but I wanted to touch on the life of Muhammad Ali. He was one of the, if not the greatest athlete in American history. And we lost him the day before yesterday, right? Was it the day before yesterday?
Yesterday is what they're reporting on the news.
Yesterday over when we reported. But he was in a hospital. The family expected him to have a brief stay. But for some reason, I felt like when I heard the news that he was in a hospital and they said that they expected a brief stay, I don't know how, but I just felt like this was it. I felt like he had lived his life and it was his time. And then I wake up the next morning, lo and behold, I see the news flash on ESPN that
he's gone.
That he passed away. Right. No, so, I'm 32 years old, so I don't know a whole lot about the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali as far as, you know, his accomplishments and accolades and who he was as an athlete as far as in real time. But through my upbringing and me being a fan of boxing, I know that everyone – patting themselves after Muhammad Ali when it came to his physical fitness, to his health, to his mental health, to his physical health, you know, his physical appearance, to his image, everything. He was always in tip-top shape. Even when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, he never changed. I mean, he was still, in my opinion, one of the sharpest guys with his illness. He was one of the sharpest guys, you know, on the planet. He still had his wit. He still had this bravado where he was the greatest of all times, and he put lightning in a chokehold and handcuffed Thunder. You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy, he was awesome from beginning to end. So tell me what your thoughts are and what your memory of Muhammad Ali was.
I grew up with him being the person that all little children in my area of Southeast D.C. looked up to. Everyone wanted to float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Everybody wanted to go and yell, "Rumble, young man, rumble." That was what we did. That was who we were. And I remember fights on the playground. And someone would say, "Oh, he knocked them out like Muhammad Ali." And that was a big deal. But what was an even bigger deal for me and for my family, you know, was the fact that he made a stand when it came to a political statement in terms of going to fight in the war. And that was the biggest legacy for me. Sure, the boxing was great. That was awesome. But the fact that this man was told that he had to go and fight a war, and he said, "Why should I fight a war for a country that doesn't even respect me?" And he made a stand at the risk of losing his boxing career, at the height of his career. That is his legacy to me.
You know, and that's out of everything. You know, that's one of the few, I think you're the only person I've ever heard use that particular moment in his career as the lasting memory as far as his legacy is concerned. And to me, that says a lot, because it's easy to get caught up in who the athlete is. That's really easy. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get caught up into him being, you know, in a sense, the arrogant, you know what I'm saying? You know the arrogance, the bravado. It's easy to get caught up into that. It's easy to get caught up into the hoopla and, you know, the flamboyancy of Muhammad Ali. But for him, like you said, to take that stance and potentially throw away millions in earnings, and he threw away his freedom. You know, he could have been in prison for years. You know, to put his and his family would have been affected by that. His family was affected by that. But as a civic leader, that stance, that moment in time in Muhammad Ali's life, I think defined who he was and what he would be remembered as. I don't think that people, yes, he's an athlete, but I think people are really looking at him as a civic leader who happened to be an athlete. You know, that meant so much to African Americans, I think, but I feel like some people are really losing sight of that and just talking about the fighter he was. He was a fighter in so many different ways. But the civic leader is who I know him as. When I was in Muhammad Ali, I remember him saying, "My name is not Cassius Clay, you'll call me Muhammad Ali." That's what you know, but go ahead.
I just feel like the boxing was just like the icing on the cake. And I don't think that he should be limited to just being a fighter. Not when he was so much more than that. He was a political activist. Yeah. And I don't think that people truly recognize that.
Yeah, he was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, for God's sake. You know what I'm saying? Like, this man, you know, was so much more. I don't, it's crazy because, like, again, me not being raised in that era, I don't know him as a fighter. I know that he was a fighter. I know that he, you know, lost to Sonny Liston and, you know, Frazier. Lost to Frazier, and he beat him a couple more times. I know that. But I really know him more for the stance he took against the Vietnam War. And the other thing, you know, in his other civil leadership, So again, I think that you know, the world lost an icon in the fact that we, even now, people like LeBron James and, you know, people who say, or and other NFL players, NBA players who stand up for, like, the Michael Brown cases and Trayvon Martin cases, I don't think that anyone will ever crack the shell of the person that Muhammad Ali was in regards to being an athlete who was a civic leader, or vice versa. I don't think that anybody will ever match that. I don't think that anybody is that bold to have that kind of voice. And you have to be fearless. You have to be a fearless person to understand. And Scoop Jackson said it yesterday when in talking about the violence in Chicago. In order for you to invoke change, you got to get your hands dirty. And
right.
Muhammad Ali's hands were muddy. You know, this guy had layers and layers and layers of dirt because he was not afraid to take that stance. He was not afraid to let everything go for his peace of mind, his sanity, his freedom, and his rights. He wasn't afraid of that. The money didn't mean anything to him if I can't go home and look at myself in the mirror and say, hey, look, I did a good thing for my country. And to me,
right.
that,
and that
that's
speaks
what
volume.
Needs to be revenue. Yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That speaks volumes.
Yeah. And do you see anyone else ever being an icon in regards to civic leadership like Muhammad Ali did?
Not in this day and age, but, you know, this is a different time. The time in which he decided, or not decided, but chose to make his stance is totally different. And there was a hunger. Now, because we have so much and we've been given so much, we've tended to spoil this younger generation. And so they have a sense of entitlement, and so they don't feel like they have to work as hard or push as hard because they feel like it should be handed to them. And guaranteed, outside of knowing about Muhammad Ali through Will Smith, the younger generation really and truly doesn't know who he is or what he stood for. Now, for my family, my children are aware because of, you know, my husband with the boxing and martial arts centers that we have, and because of being active in the Nation of Islam years ago, and because of being exposed to who he was as a fighter, as a civil rights person, and as a leader.
Again, you made a good point in what our society has been given. Our entitlements are making us fall short of what right is. And I say that,
mm-hmm.
when I say that, I'm talking about we'll sell ourselves out at the drop of a dime
mm-hmm.
if we can get a multi-million-dollar contract. We'll run
mm-hmm.
from our responsibilities as community, as, you know, fathers, you know, as husbands, as brothers, as, you know, as uncles, sisters, whatever. We'll run from those responsibilities if it means that we'll save or earn a few million dollars. And I think that, you know, that's to me, that's a smoke and mirror that a lot of people or a lot of corporations or society in general they realize that. They realize if I throw enough money at people, then they'll be blinded. They won't even see the background noise. That's
right.
In a sense, society to me is like a Ponzi scheme now. With a Ponzi scheme, you have the top person who's making trillions, right? Money with a T.
Mm-hmm.
And you think you made it because you made $100,000. So they're working the hell out of you for you to make $100,000. Meanwhile, they sit
right.
back making trillions, you know, and you're working
right.
like a slave.
Right,
because
exactly.
you think, but you don't even realize that you could be doing more if, again, you had your freedom, if you had your peace, you know, if you had, you know, if you didn't allow yourself to be hoodwinked in a sense, you know what I'm saying, with this.
Right,
this
bamboozled.
Bamboozled and hoodwinked, you know, with this, you know, this $100,000 and you think you made it all of a sudden. You know, I was part of an organization a few years ago. I'm not going to say the name of it, but it was like a traveling type of club. And
okay.
The group was really like, the leaders of the group were like really arrogant, you know, and it was like, you know, I got this BMW and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. But I'm like, well, what are you doing for your community? Oh, well, this is a traveling club, but you're an entrepreneur. You're in this community doing this work, and you can boast about this BMW. You can boast about, you know, this trip that you went on and this party you went to, but you haven't done anything for your community whatsoever. And I paid my money, and I joined this club, you know, before this conversation. I paid my money, and I joined this club, and then when I realized that it was nothing more of like a social thing, I left. I threw that money away. I lost that five, I think it was like $500-something that I paid to join. I lost it. Because for me, I went into it thinking or expecting community involvement, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the time I got into it, it was nothing remotely close to that. So I couldn't look at myself in the mirror and say, hey, look, you're doing a good thing with this. Keep going. So I let the money go.
Mm-hmm.
But
It's principle.
Yeah, the principles, we definitely don't have them in society today, especially when it comes down to civic leadership. Your boy Jamal Brown, Jamal Bryant. I don't know if you were tracking that with PFK Boom, the little the beef that he had on the streets of Baltimore.
No.
So. PFK Boom is a community leader, community activist in the city of Baltimore, and of course Jamal Bryant is a pastor of Empowerment Temple in Baltimore. Apparently, they had a beef on the streets, and PFK Boom told Jamal Bryant, "Get the hell out of the neighborhood. You're not welcome, nigga. I don't like you. Get out of my face." Jamal Bryant walks away, humbled, but apparently now they kind of pastor their differences. But even though they passed their differences and they made amends, the message that PFK Boom had is a true statement. When you're a pastor, when you're a civic leader, you're a so-called civic leader, you can't be about showtime. It shouldn't be I'm only out there when the camera's on, when there's lights, camera, action. It needs to be a day-to-day basis. It needs to be a lifestyle. It has to be something that you embed yourself in every single day. And again, this goes back to why I don't feel like we'll ever see anybody like Muhammad Ali, because people are selective. They pick and choose when they want to be that leader, and they disappear when it's not going to be beneficial to them. People like Muhammad Ali did it every single day, whether the cameras were on or whether they were not on. Now, when the cameras were on, you got more from Muhammad Ali. You know what I'm saying? He talked a lot more when the cameras were on. He knew that he understood when the cameras were on. He understood that his voice would carry weight throughout the country when the cameras were on. But it didn't stop when the cameras went off. He continued his philanthropy. He continued his community service. He continued his activism. He continued to incite and excite the people of our country through his words. Now, when the cameras are off, you never see these people, hear from these people again nowadays.
No, because it's only about the photo op. And one of the things that I've heard my husband say time and time and time again to every martial arts student that has ever come into the doors, it has always been, integrity is doing what is right regardless of anyone is looking. And he always tells them, if you have to take a stand, take that stand, whether there's a crowd around or whether it's just you. Because you're at the end of the day, you have to live with the decisions that you make. And you have to have a standard, and you need to set that standard and live according to that standard. Don't wait for the photo op to have a come-to-Jesus moment and try to, you know, let the light shine. The light should always shine 24/7.
It definitely does, but unfortunately for some people, that light is very dim, you know, and And again, it's really selective. You know, people
yeah.
can choose when they want to be, how they want to be. And it's unfortunate because our kids are being affected by it. You know, the work that I do, when I decided to be a mentor, I purposely avoided adults. You know, like I said, I'm a resiliency trainer, and I don't want to talk to adults because adults are like, it's not that I don't want to. I choose not to. If an adult comes to me with a problem, I'm always willing to help and, you know, and try to guide that person the best way I can. Meanwhile, children are coming up to become these troubled adults. So instead of us, you know, catching, you know, the situation at the root, we're looking past all of these things and again, dealing with these troubled adults who had a lifetime to really figure things out. But we can beat that to death all day, but we're going to keep on moving. I'm not sure if you're going to stay on, but
well, actually, we are getting ready to head out of town.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time with me today. It was definitely a much-needed and on-time conversation. Let us know how we can get in contact with you if somebody wants to learn how to do meal prepping and or these with some other things. Just let us know how we can get in contact with you if we want to use your service.
Okay, my name is Lisa Muhammad. I can be reached at fitgirl360@outlook.com. That's my email. Or I can be reached on 301-399-9202 or on Facebook at fitgirl360 LLC. And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram as fitgirl360.
All right, Ms. Well, Sister Lisa Muhammad, I appreciate you again. Again, thank you for all the information that you shared. Hopefully somebody out there was impacted by the information and your stories. Please join us again whenever you have some time. We'll make sure we set it up. I'm interested to see if tracking your progress as a professional in general. But again, thank you for your time today, and hope you come on again soon.
Cool beans. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Hey, so again, that was a great conversation with Sister Lisa Muhammad. Again, if you need her information, reach out to us again some other time, and we'll make sure we get it to you. But moving along, this week we're heading to the California primary, where Senator Bernie Sanders is expected to put on a good show, but many pollsters are expecting that he's not going to really, it's not going to help him secure the candidacy, but the moral victory is the future of the Democratic Party. Now, a lot of people are saying that the young liberals will be motivated and it was going to spark a trend in the future of the Democratic Party in regards to Bernie Sanders and his performance in California. We all know that Hillary Clinton is the front runner. She probably will secure the nomination, depending on the outcome of this investigation that's going on and this mess that she found herself in with the private servers being set up in her house and the private email servers and Benghazi and everything else that happened to her over the last couple of years. But it's interesting to see how many delegates that he'll receive, because I think the same thing will probably come into play when it comes down as Donald Trump will come down to Hillary and Bernie Sanders. And that is, when it goes to the convention, will they support Hillary Clinton? I think it's going to be interesting, because especially with this indictment and the investigation looming over her head. A lot of people are saying she should go to jail. A lot of people are saying that she should be, if she is elected, she should be impeached immediately. So it's the state of American politics is scary. You know, CNN, they're saying what kind of commander in chief would Hillary Clinton be? In an article written by, let me see who this is, Peter Bergen. He's a CNN national security analyst. Again, the question is, with her security breaches and with her performance as Secretary of State, would she be an effective commander-in-chief? Jokes have been going around talking about Bill Clinton being the first lady and stuff like that, but that's really irrelevant. But he said, in what may have been the most forceful speech of her career, Hillary Clinton said in San Diego on Thursday that electing Donald Trump as commander-in-chief would be an historic mistake because of his dangerously incoherent foreign policy ideas and temperament. This raises the question, if Clinton were to become president, what kind of commander-in-chief would she be? And how might her approach differ from Trump's? Clinton, unlike Trump, has an extensive foreign policy record to examine based on her four-year tenure as Secretary of State, which can help us understand how she might operate as commander-in-chief. As Secretary of State, for example, she presided over the effort in 2010 to significantly tighten sanctions in Iran, which helped to bring Iranians eventually to the negotiating table on their nuclear program. This diplomatic effort resulted in a 12-2 vote in the UN Security Council to enhance sanctions against Iran, one of her major achievements as Secretary of State, according to New York Times reporter Mark Lander in his excellent book, Alter Egos. Now, the title of that book, again, says a lot about what people feel about Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt that Hillary Clinton could be an effective commander-in-chief, but one would have to really wonder what her alter ego would bring because of the scandal and because of the issues that are being brought to the forefront because of, again, the Benghazi and the email scandal or the server issue. I think without me identifying who I am as a Democrat or Republican, I really feel that the Democrats, with the issues, still can lead our country better than the Republicans at this point. We keep hearing about people saying that, you know, well, Donald Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again, unemployment is at 4.7%, homeless rates are dropping, everything from high school graduation rates have improved since President Obama took office. Now, just like I was talking with Sister Muhammad about, it's not just a President Obama thing. The Democrats in its entirety have worked together in improving our country. So I would hope that the past experiences and our improvements over the last 9 years or 8 years would be enough for us to win the presidency. Well, I said us, but for the Democrats to win the presidency again. We'll see, but who knows what the next few months will bring. It's a scary day. It will be a scary day for us if Donald Trump actually wins the presidency. But we all know that. I think that at this point, the people who support Donald Trump are the people who feel the exact same way that Donald Trump feels. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with you feeling the way that you feel, personally. But as a nation, we definitely have to make sure we protect our interests as a nation and not, you know, select the individual's interests. And that's what we have with Donald Trump. He says it time and time again that he's a businessman. And with him being a businessman, and if you look at the ventures that he's had, he's been in bankruptcy more than once. A lot of things that he touched has failed. A lot of things he touched have succeeded. But with his arrogance, I think has been a slow deterioration of success because he's become so arrogant, because he's lost that drive and that thirst for success. I think that he's starting to fail more than he succeeds, but we'll see. Hopefully he doesn't become our president. We won't have to worry about talking about it anymore. The NBA playoffs. Now, I think I was very close to calling game one. I said that the Warriors will win 101 to 74. I think it was 104 to 84. So I was pretty. I was in the ballpark, but I think that it's going to be that way for the entire playoffs. I called Cleveland to lose in six, and I say Cleveland losing six because Cleveland definitely has the squad to match up with Golden State, but they don't have the leadership. But they have the squad as far as the starters are concerned. First, they don't have the leadership. In the second quarter of game one, LeBron James went back to his same old self and started whining and crying and, oh, my gosh, woe is me. What are you doing? Shoot the ball, pass the ball. It's everybody's fault but his. But the bench, Golden State Warriors have a bench that is out of this freaking world. When you look at the stats from game one, the leading scorer of the Warriors for the year was the least, was scored the least, and the, one of the people who was at the bottom for the year was at the top. This is the way the Golden State Warriors were built. They were built to be a team. Steve Kerr and everything he learned in Phoenix, everything he learned in Chicago, and everything he learned in San Antonio, he's taken all of those and brought them to what he has in a mini dynasty right now with the Golden State Warriors. This man has learned, and he's applied everything that he's learned from these great leaders in Michael Jordan, Greg Popovich, and I guess Kiki Vandeweghe at Phoenix. But he took all these things, and he's building a franchise. He's building a dynasty. And I don't understand why it's so hard for people to see. I know that a lot of people don't like Steph Curry because, you know, he's a babyface assassin and stuff like that, and, you know, and he's so cute and everybody loves him. But he's not LeBron James. Neither is Klay Thompson. Nobody is LeBron James. It's like LeBron James is not Jordan. But they have a team from top to bottom, people who can come in and contribute on a night-to-night basis. There's no reason why daggone Sean Livingston can't come to the game and drop 20. He can do that. Guess what? Because he was a starter in the league for a long period of time. He's proven to be that. If it wasn't for his gruesome leg injury, he probably would be a superstar in the NBA right now. But he suffered a leg injury, you know, had to take a back seat, went to the NBDL, worked his way back up. He's hungry. Andre Iguodala was a starter with the 76ers, was a starter with the Denver Nuggets, came to Golden State, took a back seat, took, you know, a piece of humble pie. And guess what? He's a contributing factor. Mo buckets, Mo space comes in the game whenever he's called in, he's dropping buckets. Barbosa was a starter everywhere he went until he came to Golden State. Guess what? I was telling my brother, he comes up, you know, he has the potential to come off the bench and run off 9 straight points. Guess what? He did that in the game. Came right off the bench, hit 2 straight 3-point buckets. Then scored another one. Then I think got fouled. Went 1 for 2, and he had 9 points in like 5 minutes or something like that. This team is stacked from top to bottom. Yes, people are all bent out of shape because of what happened with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Oklahoma City had Golden State's number all year long. Every game that they played Golden State, it was a tight game. But guess what? Just like every other game that Oklahoma City was winning down the back stretch of the year, they lost it. They found a way to lose it in the last 5 minutes of the game. And Golden State took advantage of that. Golden State doesn't apply the series as a rush or a sprint. It's a marathon to them. And you have to outlast Golden State. Therefore, Cleveland will lose the game, will lose the series before Golden State just go out there and whip them. Golden State isn't that team when it comes in a playoff time. They'll run through teams all year long and, you know, crush teams by 40, 50 points. But when it comes down to playoffs, again, they're methodical. They're going to slowly just grind you up. They're going to get those 50-50 balls when it matters. Cleveland, they don't have that. You know, outside of J.R. Smith diving on the floor, you didn't see that. Much Tristan Thompson, he does it every once in a while, but outside of that, LeBron ain't diving on the floor for the loose ball. He'll dive in the stands and elbow somebody in the head and crack his skull or something like that. But he's not going to go out there and put his body on the line to secure a loose ball. Outside of J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson, Delvin Dover might be the next one. Outside of that, nobody's doing it. With that, Cleveland will lose this series to the Golden State Warriors before the Golden State Warriors beat the brakes off of Cleveland. Continuing with our coverage of the Flint water crisis, more evidence is pouring out as far as who, what, when, where, why, and how. It's not looking good for the leadership in the city of Detroit. People are still without water. People are still getting sick, you know, being hospitalized. More cases are being brought up. It's still no resolution in sight. All we can do is continue to pray for the citizens of Detroit. Oh, I'm sorry, of Flint, and hope that over the next, I don't know what I would do if I was somebody in this situation right now. I just hope that they can endure it and continue to push forward. That's it for the show today, ladies and gentlemen. Again, next week we'll be back with Levon and myself. Actually, I won't be on the show next week. I got to take me a little vacay, kind of. But I hope you enjoyed the show today. Again, thank you to Sister Lisa Muhammad and her advice. Hopefully we helped motivate some people today, and hopefully you all reach out to her to continue to get that support. But with that is the show. We want to hope you enjoy your Saturday. Oh, big ups to all the graduating class of 2016. My niece, Tierra Queen, will be graduating today. My daughter, Andrea Brooks, she'll be graduating tomorrow. Again, I'm so proud of you all. Keep your head up. Follow your dreams, class of 2016, and don't let nobody stop you from being who you want to be. All right, it's our society, our country is really, in my opinion, a state of turmoil right now, so it's really easy to lose your way. But I would beg that you continue to keep your head low, push forward, and not be distracted by our society and the disarray that we're in right now. I'm so proud of all you graduates. I'm proud of my kids at Maxdale Elementary School. I'm proud of my kids at, you know, my baby, Amir, he's going to sixth grade. Michael Marie, she's doing big things. I'm so proud of y'all. Next year is going to be an even bigger year for the other college graduates and high school graduates. Again, I appreciate y'all time today. I love you all. We holla. Peace.